Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diofen Heskey.
It is still the Republic of Ireland 1, Greece 0 in injury time in Tallaght Stadium. We'll be across to Stephanie Roach in a moment. Coming up on the football show a little bit later than normal, we will talk to John Giles about the week's football, and I'll be joined in studio by Graeme Burke of Shamrock Rovers. All that coming your way between now and 10 o'clock. But let's go to Tallaght, where Diane Caldwell's goal just before half-time is still the only goal of the game between the Republic of Ireland and Greece. 93 and a half minutes gone, about 90 seconds to go for the Republic of Ireland to hang on, Stephanie.
Yeah, 5 minutes at a time. It's been a, I wouldn't say a nervous, obviously, with the game at 1-0. Greece haven't, as I said, been up to much, but a long ball up there to Marie Hurahan, and she caught it, but there was, as that ball was in the air, you could hear the kind of few sighs within the crowd, obviously a little bit nervous of what could happen. But it's been a very professional performance by the girls. Rusha Littlejohn for me has been fantastic. She's just gone off. Ball just came across the 6-yard box there, but it's been seen out by Marie Hurahan. Rusha Littlejohn came close, linked up with Julianne Russell. Lovely little touch by the defender and got a shot on goal, but just went wide. She seemed very dangerous throughout the game and deservedly so was awarded the player of the match. So really, really good performance from Rusha Littlejohn. And as I said, a very professional performance from all the girls. I think Denise and Niamh Fahey in midfield have been very good, solid in that kind of defensive role, but Rusha kind of running the show just ahead of them. And Diane Caldwell as well, not just with the goal, but been very impressed with her. She's been very calm on the ball. She's finding very, very good balls out of the back, not just launching it forward. She's found Katie McKay with a few really good switches of play. So just, as I said, a really professional performance for the girls, and I hope they can see it through now. It's not too long left. I can't wait for that final whistle to go.
Yeah, I'd imagine it's going to go in a matter of seconds. There it goes now. So the Republic of Ireland get the win. We said before the game it was a must win, and Vera Powell's side have done the job. Diane Caldwell, the match winner with that well-worked goal from a set piece to give the Republic of Ireland a 1-0 victory. They go to Montenegro now during the week. Another game that, quite simply, they have to win and will be expected to win, Stephanie?
Yeah, exactly. I think, obviously, as I said tonight, it was a professional performance by the girls. They know what's needed in this game and the next, so hopefully they can go to Montenegro and get 3 points again and roll on to April against Germany, which will be the big game.
All right. Great stuff tonight, Stephanie. Stephen is there as well, and he'll be talking to some of the Republic of Ireland players and getting some more post-match reaction from Stephanie as well. You can check out offtheball.com for that throughout the evening. Now, in the FA Cup fifth round, Manchester United look to be on the way to the quarterfinals. They lead Derby County by 2-0 at Pride Park. The goals came in the first half from Luke Shaw and Odion Ighalo. Now, a little bit later than usual, but John Giles is with us live this evening. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
53106, the text number, if you've got any questions for John. I know you're watching that Derby Manchester United game. What sort of performance from United?
They deserve to be 2-0 up front at half-time, Nathan. You know, Derby didn't really have a real... Well, they had a goal with them, but they weren't good enough to take advantage of anything that United didn't do. So United were on top and deserved to be 2-0 in front.
Derby, obviously, championship opponents for Manchester United, but Odion Ighalo, 2 starts, 2 goals. There was a lot of criticism about his signing, an act of desperation by Manchester United. Has he shown enough that he could contribute in the league between now and the end of the season?
Yeah, I think so. I never saw him before, Nathan, but he looks very useful. Took his goal well tonight. With Rashford being injured, as we know, you know, they need somebody up there, but he looks like he'll do a job for them.
And obviously it's Wayne Rooney back up against his former club, playing in that deeper role now. Do you think you felt he would be well suited to throughout his career? How's he done?
Okay. Okay. He's not as fit as he used to be, Nathan. So it's a big game for him tonight and a hard game to do what needs to be done in the middle of the field for Derby.
So there's still 27 minutes to go there, but Manchester United are leading by 2 goals. And we'll update you if there are any goals. So looking back at some of the stories of the week then, Liverpool beaten yet again, third defeat in 4 matches in the FA Cup, first defeat of the season in the Premier League as well. The FA Cup game against Chelsea, pretty open game. Chelsea were a bit more clinical than Liverpool were. I know you were watching the match, and Billy Gilmore, this young teenager, 18 years of age, started in the middle of midfield. You were pretty impressed?
Very impressed with him, Nathan. Actually, he's the best midfield player I've seen for a long time.
Right.
Actual midfield player, doing the job that midfields traditionally did. You know, he wasn't... you couldn't classify him as a going forward or a defensive midfielder, a holding midfield player. He was just a midfield player who got forward at the right time and got back at the right time, and he was very, very good, Nathan. You know, we've seen the experienced players on the pitch. Jorginho came on. Fabinho was on for Liverpool. Looked very expensive players. And in my opinion, he was better than either of them.
Right. And at 18, and with very little first-team experience, to have that sort of bravery on a big occasion like that bodes pretty well.
Yeah, well, he's like all good players, Nathan. Although he's very young, I saw something in the paper where he said, no, I was looking forward to getting on the pitch to show what I could do. So he wasn't suffering with nerves, which if they're going to be suffering with nerves, they're not going to do it. So I'd say he would be nervous, like most players before a match, but couldn't wait to get out there, but really did a job. You know, what I find with the midfield players now, they get on the ball, and the first option seems to be to knock it square, knock it back.
Mm.
You know, you see very, very few midfield players, including Jorginho and Fabinho. You don't see them going past players, Nathan.
Yeah.
You know, you very see them going with the midfield player option, go past them and go players, where it really opens up the game. You know, the first choice we seem to get it and give a simple pass out to the right back and get it back again. And there's nothing better than a midfield player beating the opposing midfield player. And this is what this kid did the other day. You know, he got back at the right time, he got forward at the right time, he was prepared to take the players on. And I haven't seen that for a long time since the old days. You know, like Xavi was great. I remember Xavi playing with Barcelona. I'll just have a little list here. Souness could do it at Liverpool in the great days. Scholes could do it for Manchester United. Pirlo did it in our time. Modric can still do it. He doesn't go past players very well, but he links it up very well. Vieira could do it. And Gascoigne could do it in his day. Now, he didn't last very long doing it, but he could go past players really skillful. And when you do that from a midfield position, it really, really opens it up, you know.
That's quite a list of names you've just put an 18-year-old up beside.
Well, he's still got to do it, Nathan, but he's the best I've seen at doing it so far.
Yeah,
and I'm including the experienced players. I haven't seen any of them do it. It seems to be now accepted in the game. If the midfield player gets the ball, or anybody in midfield gets the ball, if there's a 50-50 chance of turning on it and getting it forward, or passing it forward, or turning it back and play it to the fullback, it goes back to the fullback. They go back, you know. The easy way, I think it's the easy way out. It's become fashionable in the game because now you've got designated players for, you know, is he a holding midfield player, is he an attacking midfield player? Like in the players I mentioned there, Gascoigne, Vieira, Pirlo, and these guys, they were just midfield players, Nathan. You know, they could score goals, they could get back at the right time, so they weren't designated players. And I think that's what's happened to the midfield player. They're designated midfield players. Most of them are called holding midfield players.
Mm.
And they hardly ever pass the ball forward or take anybody on. And I mentioned that the two players, Jorginho, Chelsea, Fabinho, if you have a picture of them in your head, you never see them going past anybody.
No,
now,
they just keep
players,
it tidy.
They're good players at what they do. But really, one midfield player going past his opposing midfield player really, really opens up the game. And what I saw this kid playing, Billy Gilmer, he didn't do it all the time, but he tried to do it all the times that was the right times to do it. He was very, very promising, very, very good.
When you talk then about midfielders, and we talk a lot about that old-style, traditional midfielder who can do a bit of everything, do you worry when you see someone at 18 like Billy Gilmer that when the coaches and the managers get a hand on him, that actually they'll try and change his game, that they'll try and turn him into a Jorginho who just does the one job rather than is a little bit of everything?
Well, that's true, depending on the manager, Nathan. But Lampard was put, first of all, put him in the team. He left Jorginho out. So he obviously, I heard him talking after the match, and you could tell by Lampard, he is encouraging him to do it. Because if he wasn't encouraging him to do it, he'd be discouraging him to do it, and he wouldn't have been doing it the other night, Nathan. Mm. So he's obviously been encouraged by Lampard, which is the main, and the coaching staff, whoever they have there, because Lampard would be obviously the manager. You've got people working below him. It's the people below him that can spoil the young players. So whoever's doing it at Chelsea coaching is coaching well, and they've coached him very well to come into the team, because Lampard hasn't been there that long. But he put him in the team, and he put him in ahead of Jorginho, and this was a match they really needed to win. So he's obviously got confidence in him. and is allowing them to do it and encouraging them to do it, Nathan.
We have two live games on Sunday. We have Chelsea against Everton first up and then the Manchester Derby. It will be interesting to see how Frank Lampard responds then, because Chelsea are obviously in a battle for the top four.
Yeah.
The temptation of maybe an inexperienced manager like Frank Lampard is to always go with experience. But sometimes when a player comes onto the scene like that, you just need to trust your instinct and give him a chance again. And even though it's a huge game, maybe you're probably a different type of game because it's a Premier League match rather than FA Cup, and stick him in on Sunday.
Well, it was a huge match for them the other night, Nathan. You know, for Chelsea, it was a huge match because they're in the cup. They're not going to. They might qualify for Europe. They're not going to win the Premiership. But it was a trophy they'd like to win. So it wasn't as if he was playing somebody in there just to give him a go. You know, it was a big match. A big match they had to win. They obviously wanted to win. Against Liverpool. I guess it was against Liverpool that this kid was playing. So he might not put him in at the weekend because he might think, no, okay, don't overdo it with him. But I wouldn't be surprised if he did play him. I think he'd be able for it, the kid.
Right. What about Liverpool then? Their long, long unbeaten run and winning streak in the Premier League coming to an end at the weekend. Beaten 3-0 by Watford, and the amount of chances Watford created in that second half. They concede a couple of goals again against Chelsea. What's gone wrong over the last couple of weeks?
Well, they didn't play well enough, Nathan. You know, that's basically it. I know that sounds very... I'm not trying to be clever there. But it can happen. You know, like football is in many ways a game of chance, like a lot of sports is. And what happens with the likes of Liverpool and the great teams is with them good managers, they eliminate the chance as much as you possibly can. But there's certain days, Nathan, no matter how you did, I don't think they were complacent or anything. The other team played extremely well, took the goals well, and sometimes you just got to hold your hands up and get on with it and go on with the next game. I mean, it's happened a few times, the last three matches or so for Liverpool. They haven't played as well as they can, but you get that over a long season, Nathan. I mean, I'll just give you a little thing from my time playing at Leeds. That it can happen. In 1973-74, we went 29 matches unbeaten. Then in April, we lost 3-2 to Stoke away. And the next week, we lost 4-1 to Burnley at Leeds.
Right.
But went on to win it. You know?
Yeah.
It can happen over a long period of time. And what Liverpool have done is phenomenal, the season that they've had so far. It's phenomenal that you don't get one or two matches where things just don't go your way. The team like Watford played better than they've played probably all season, maybe for a long, long time. Maybe not never play as well again this season. You just don't know. But that happens over a long period of time and when you're playing a lot of matches. So it's no surprise. It's not that Liverpool were complacent. Chelsea were very, very good, deserved to beat them. And Watford were very good, deserved to beat them. But Liverpool will start again. And I think, well, they will go on to win the league. And they might go on to win the Champions League again, Nathan. Over a long season, you're bound to get matches like Liverpool have come across in the last couple of weeks.
Odion Ighalo scored again for Manchester United, so they now lead 3-0 away at Derby. 17 minutes left in that one. Jordan Henderson, since he's missed the spell through injury and Fabinho's come back from injury, is that part of this, that they're a bit weaker in midfield than they were when Henderson was fully fit and probably playing the best football of his life?
I don't think so, Nathan. You know, they've had players out before. There's lots of matches that Henderson didn't play in before. That either, you know, the front lads, whether it be Salah, and they've been left out of the team and they've gone on to win matches. I don't think Henderson would have made any difference against Watford or indeed against Chelsea,
right,
to be honest. He's a good player, but they have a lot of good players in there, you know, that sometimes Henderson has been rested. But I wouldn't know. The defeats were very, very good from the opposition, the players from the opposition. No, to answer your question, I don't think Henderson would have made any difference to the results in those particular matches.
I want to move on to Tottenham and the Troy Parrott situation, who got some game time last night against Norwich and ended up missing his penalty kick. And Jose Mourinho's had a lot to say. He's probably spoken more about Troy Parrott than any other player since he took over at Manchester United. After the game, he spoke about the penalty. He said, look, the penalty is nothing. The problem is not his experience. The problem is the 30 minutes. People can see he has a lot of work to do. So don't think that Parrott is the second Harry Kane, because he's just a young kid that needs to work. Let's forget the penalty, because he all missed penalties. It wasn't just Troy. It all seems a little bit unnecessary, that sort of criticism of an 18-year-old.
Well, it's worse than that, Nathan. He was in the paper the other day. He was in the paper a couple of weeks ago. And what he was saying in the paper the other day, he was talking about Troy Parrott. And he said every time he was playing with the kids, it was with the mentality of, I shouldn't be here. Mm. And I'm too good to be here. You know, like, why does he say things like this? I mean, this is only a young player that he should be treating with kindness and encouraging them to come on. I mean, that's making a statement like this. If he was too big-headed, he didn't want to be playing with the kids, I'm too good for them, what am I doing here? There's no need to make those statements. You know, if you look at his record overall, Nathan, with Mourinho, he's been a great manager.
Yeah.
But he hasn't been great at bringing kids on.
Mm.
You know, De Bruyne was a young player there, Salah was a young player at Chelsea, and he's been very, very successful in doing what he's did. But Manchester United, the only one he brought on was Scott McTominay.
McTominay, yeah.
And he actually made reference to that the other day. He said, you know, he had similar problems with McTominay, but he got him there. But if you look at his time at Manchester United, he was the only young player that he brought through. Didn't bring that many through at Chelsea, so I don't think he's good at handling the young players and doing it in a public way with Parrott. Like, if I was Troy Parrott, this young fella reading that, I wouldn't be too happy about it, Nathan.
No,
there's no need for it. There's no need to make those statements.
It feels like already it's a big test of character for Troy Parrott. He only turned 18 a couple of weeks ago, and to see your name in the back pages of the English papers every couple of days with your manager having a good go at you and questioning your attitude, it takes a good character to be able to overcome that.
Well, it does. It's totally unnecessary. You know, what he's saying was when he was training with the kids, the mentality was, I shouldn't be here. Mm. What am I doing here? You know, I mean, I would doubt very much if that was his attitude anyway. But even if it was his attitude, then you pull him to the one side and say, look, you've got to grip yourself. But nobody else knows anything about it. You don't put it in the paper, Nathan, where everybody's reading it and say, that Troy Parrott must be a right so-and-so. It's awful management from a manager of his experience with a young boy coming on. I just don't understand it. I mean, why say anything at all? If he feels that way, do it privately with the player.
Yeah. Is he using Troy Parrott as some sort of distraction from the fact that there's been really no bounce since Mourinho came in at Tottenham?
You never know with Mourinho. It wouldn't be. I don't know. This is a bit too serious, I think, and too personal for that. But I mean, his history has definitely been. It's never my fault.
Mm.
But I've never seen him pick on a young lad before because things are not going well. I just don't understand it.
What should Troy Parrott do? Do you just keep the head down, keep working, and either hope that Mourinho comes round like he did with Scott McTominay and give him the chance, or just bide your time and hope that, well, how long is Mourinho going to last at Tottenham anyways?
Well, it's the best thing that Parrott can do, Nathan. But everybody's different, you know. You don't know how he's taken this. You know, kids get down and say, well, what am I doing here? Am I no good? What am I? You know, you have to build kids up as well, Nathan. You don't need to knock them down if it's not necessary.
Yeah.
You know, he just hasn't started yet, the kid. So, some people are very, very, well, the thick skin. It would just run off them like water off a duck. But other kids are sensitive. I don't know what Parrott's like. I don't know the kid at all. But I haven't seen it in my career in football where things like that are actually helpful.
Have you ever seen a situation like what happened with Eric Dier? There's the obvious comparison to Eric Cantona, but this was different. It seems like it was one of his own supporters that he was climbing into the stand to get at.
Yeah. Well, Cantona had a kick at somebody.
Mm. Yeah, Eric Dier didn't get that close.
Like, I think Cantona's situation was because he was substituted and somebody was giving him a little bit of stick and he jumped off and tried to have a kick at him.
Yeah, he'd been sent off.
I don't know what happened really with the Dier situation. I think it was his brother was involved in it. That somebody was giving him abuse. But what's happened in football like that when you're coming off? This is at home as well, the home supporter, I believe. I think when people go to matches like that as a Spurs supporter the other day, they feel they have a right to abuse players because they lost a match in that. You know, they feel it's their right. If I'll have a right go at this fella, tell him he's a right so-and-so, he's hopeless, and worse things than that. Because they're in a football ground and the player is not supposed to respond. You know, players are human the same as anybody else. And if you get in terrible abuse, which I don't know what was happening, But there'd be a lot of players' temptation to do what Dyer did. I mean, nobody has the right to go into a football club because they're a football team and supporting your team that lost, that they have a right to verbally abuse them and verbally abuse them in a big way. But Dyer again, but Dyer is a professional footballer, and really you can't do what he did, Nathan. I can understand why he did it, but you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, I think Mourinho summed it up. He said, Dyer did something that we professionals cannot do, but in these circumstances, something that every single one of us would do.
Yeah.
Does he deserve a suspension, or do the FA need to realise what was happening and let him off and accept that, well, listen, he was receiving and his family receiving a lot of abuse?
What should happen? Actually, whoever was given the abuse should be lifted.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, there should be something in the laws that don't allow you to do what he was doing. So he should be punished, and if he's punished, then Dyer should be punished.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out over the next little while. From Tottenham's point of view, like, Harry Kane is obviously missing. He's been such a key part. Heung-min Son is injured as well. So they're arguably their two best players are out. Would you have expected much more from Mourinho, though? Did you expect that there would be a bit of a bounce?
Yeah, I expected more from them since he's taken over, Nathan. I don't like the team were conceding a lot of goals, which was what he was famous for, was, you know, clean sheets. I would expect it. I know they've had a few injuries, and you're right about Harry Kane and that, and of course it's difficult for him. But I think they should be doing better than they're doing. I mean, if you take it the other night, they're playing Norwich, who are bottom of the league, Nathan. I mean, Norwich don't have as good of players as Spurs have, and they beat them, you know, and they've lost a few misconceding goals. I don't think it's looking good for them at this particular stage, because Mourinho is well known for making excuses. It's never about him, Nathan. It's always about somebody else, you know. And you know, I think looking at it there, I think he's upset a few players already at Spurs, particularly Dele Alli.
Yeah.
You know, that's his game. I think when he's not winning, then it's never his fault. It has to be somebody else. And he hits out, and it makes the situation worse. So I know it's early days at Spurs, but it still doesn't look right, Nathan.
The Manchester Derby is the big game this weekend. We'll have it live from 4:30 on Sunday with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr. It's probably a bigger game in a way for Manchester United now, because City, they're not going to win the league. They're going to finish in the Champions League places. They've got their eye on a Champions League clash with Real Madrid. There's been a big gulf between these two sides over the last 3 or 4 years, generally. John, do you see Manchester United being able to give them a bit more of a game of it?
Funny enough, Nathan, I think the last 3 or 4 matches, certainly over 4 matches, City have won 3 of them. Two of them at City's ground. So, although they haven't done as well, obviously, overall as City have done. But when it's come head to head, they've actually have a good record against City. So, you know, once it's a derby match, I don't think there'll be anybody playing weakened teams or resting players for this. It's too big a game in Manchester, Nathan, for that. But United's record, is that Old Trafford, is it?
Yeah, it's at Old Trafford.
Yeah, well, they've got a worse record at Old Trafford than they have at the head, funny enough. So, you know, depends on what team City plays, or just talking to De Bruyne being unfit. But I think from the supporters' point of view, Nathan, they'd sometimes rather win the derby matches than win the cup.
Right. Yeah, City obviously won the cup last weekend. They were pushed all the way by Aston Villa in the end. But again, just yet another trophy for Pep Guardiola. They could go on and win the Champions League. It feels as though everyone's written this side off maybe a little bit too early.
Well, I think that happens in football, Nathan. You know, one minute you're here, or the next minute you're a fool. And he's hit back well in the last couple of weeks. The very good win, as we know, at Real Madrid. And as I said as well, I think on our programme, Nathan, that, you know, they weren't the Real Madrid of old. But they beat Barcelona over the weekend, 2-0. Yeah. So City went to Madrid and got a very good result there. So it could well be, Nathan, you can afford to lose a couple of matches now and again in the Champions League and still win it, as we saw last year with Liverpool and Spurs going into it. So you never know. You never know in the Champions League. It's a knockout competition. But the results in recent times, well, in the last 2 or 3, have been very, very good for City.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens on Sunday. John, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Thanks, Nathan.
Just a reminder that every night this week we're giving away a €100 one for all voucher, and on Saturday we'll have a grand prize of flights and tickets to the Paddy Power Stairs Hurdle Day, which is next Thursday, March 12th. You'll be flown to Cheltenham, get to enjoy breakfast at Jury's Hotel, be brought to from Jury's to the race course, enjoy one of the best days in the racing calendar, be transferred back to the airport afterwards, and then flown back to Dublin by nightfall. It'll be a cracking day. And it's all with thanks to our Cheltenham partner, Paddy Power. To win, just play our game, Phony or Pony. The rules are simple. We'll read out three horses' names, and you have to tell us which one is the real horse, i.e. the pony. Here are tonight's three names. Is it A, Presenting Percy, B, Percy Pig, or C, Pig in a Blanket? Pick out the real horse from that list. Text your name and answer to 53106, and we'll pick a winner who'll go into our draw on Saturday's Off the Ball between 3 and 5 o'clock. Again, it's all with thanks to Paddy Power. Cheltenham's coming home. Manchester United still 3-0 up against Derby County, 5-0 left in their FA Cup clash. United heading to the quarterfinals, where they'll take on Norwich City. And the Republic of Ireland have beaten Greece in their European Championship qualifier. Dan Caldwell scored the only goal of the game at Tallaght Stadium. Up next, we're talking to a man who knows all about scoring plenty of goals at Tallaght Stadium, Shamrock Rovers. Graham Burke is going to be in studio.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Duff and Heskey.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Graham Burke of Shamrock Rovers. How are you keeping?
Yeah, I'm good. Yourself?
Very well. You're here because Air Sport are going to broadcast 15 SSE Electricity League games in the coming months, and will continue to broadcast all of the Republic of Ireland's home UEFA Under 21 qualifier. And I've no doubt plenty of Shamrock Rovers games will be amongst them, because you're flying at the moment.
Yeah, we've got off to a great start at the moment. Obviously, 4 wins and 4, you know, and we come up against a tough test now in Sligo. You know, it's never been an easy game. I've always found the games down there are hard. You know, obviously, I don't think I've ever won down there.
Right.
So I think it tells you how difficult it's been to get a win down there. You know,
because obviously, Rovers have had, coming into the season, 3 bogey teams essentially.
Yeah,
and Bohemians, Dundalk, and Sligo.
Yeah,
you've got the first two.
We've got the first two, so hopefully we get number 3 out of the way. You know, I think it was a hoodoo. Obviously, with Bowles not gone so long without a win, and we've won the last 3 against them, and then to be Dundalk on Friday was a great win, and you know, to win the Sligo now, obviously people and say yeah, it's been a bogey team for us, but hopefully we get a good performance and we're able to get with a win.
You're injured at the moment.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
Yeah, I have a little bit of a calf problem. You know, I felt it against Cork, but I didn't think it would have been too serious, but obviously I've had a scan and obviously I have a little tear in my calf. So
what are you looking at?
Probably they said about 4 weeks, you
right.
know, but it feels good now. 2 weeks in, obviously, so hopefully I get back running by the end of next week, or hopefully early in the week.
So was that on the 4th or 5th goal you got the calf injury?
I felt it is in early enough in the game, but it wasn't affecting me,
right.
as in running around. I couldn't feel it as I was running. It was more when I was walking. I knew it was a little bit niggly, but obviously I could go through the game or any problems, but I got through it. But it was the next morning when I knew maybe I should have thought a little bit more into it and maybe have came off the pitch.
Right. Well, you wouldn't have got the history, though.
No, I wouldn't have got that.
1969, the last time a Rovers player scored 5 goals in a match.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable when you have to go that far back to see how many goals, 5 goals in a game, you know. But it was one of them nights that, you know, everything was just clicking and I was getting into positions to score them, and lucky enough I was finishing them.
Because you're not the out-and-out striker, so Aaron Green would be seen as the out-and-out striker.
Mm.
You were playing in that more number 10 role,
yeah.
So to score 5 goals from that is unusual in itself. That sort of positioning you're talking about, is that something you spend a lot of time working on, getting yourself, and have you set yourself a target of goals that you feel you should be getting from that position this season?
I don't really set a target. You know, obviously Jack's playing in that 10 role, where I'm playing a little bit higher, so it kind of is a part of me game now where I kind of have to stay higher and try to get myself in a few goal scoring positions. But I don't think of myself as an out-and-out goal scorer. You know, if I can chip in with goals, it's great, but I kind of look at me all-round play.
That dynamic between yourself and Jack, I think, is something everyone in the League of Ireland was very excited about it at the start of the season and even the glimpses we saw at the end of last season. Is it something that when you're on the training ground, when you came back and Jack was there, did it just click, or do you need to spend a lot of time figuring out that you're not ending up in the same position all the time? Because you probably would both like to pick up the ball in similar enough positions.
Yeah, I think we both would say the position we play is it's the same position we'd like to play, you know. So I think maybe it suits me a little bit better to play high. I think, like, obviously, as in growing up, I would have been a striker and I would have been more familiar with that, to where Jack is more of a midfield, creative midfielder, you know. So it was kind of at the start, we'd drop into the same positions where we'd be right next to each other. We'd be kind of doing the same sort of job. So the emphasis for me is to try and leave that space there to let him roam in it and try to get up higher on the pitch and try to get in them goal scoring positions and try to occupy the centre backs a little bit more.
It's working all right so far.
Yeah, we're going good so far, but it's only a start for us. You know, it's a long season. We can't sit back and say we've had a great start and pat ourselves on the back, because it is a long season ahead.
And it was a good start last season as well, so I guess you learned from that, a lot of those Rovers players. But the fact and the manner of the two victories against Bowes, and then there's the hammering of Cork, and then the win against Dundalk, leaving it so late against Bohemians. And even that Dundalk game, though you weren't playing and you're sitting on the sidelines, and like, there's 25 minutes to go, Shamrock Rovers have played really well, but Dundalk are leading, and you're kind of looking, thinking, Dundalk just have that knowledge of champions, that somehow they know how to win these games, yet Rovers turn it round and come out on top. Does that game on Friday night, does it feel very different to maybe any other game you've had at Rovers in terms of what it means?
Obviously the meaning is a bit more, because they're champions, you know, you want to beat the champions. But the character we've shown, even in the Bowls game, you know, maybe another day that's 0-0, but we keep going in horrendous conditions and we get the win. And then also the character to be 2-1 down, where Dundalk win them games because they're champions, and, you know, I mean, they end up grinding it out, and it shows the character that we have in the squad, and to end up going on and winning it, you know. And I think it puts down a marker, but it is early. It's not really a marker of so much content. It's just a marker to say we're here, and, you know what I mean, we're going to push us all the way, and, you know, to get over with the win. And because there was, like, we started really well, we went, and then they scored a scream out of a goal, and then, like, they end up getting 2-1, and, you know what I mean, they're playing well, and then we end up getting back into it, and then we end up dominating the later stages of the game, and we got that goal to win it. But I think it was a great show for the league, as in how many people were at the game, and the game in itself, the top two as it stands at this moment in time, going toe to toe.
How are you enjoying being back? Like, are you back for good now, do you feel, or is there always a part of you that's thinking, if this goes well and an opportunity came up in England, that you'd go back?
I don't really think about it at that stage. Obviously, I am at this moment in time, I am on loan to Rovers till June, and, you know, I don't really think about what is going to happen. You know, I just want to concentrate on my football. Obviously, now I have to concentrate on getting back fit again and getting back on the pitch, but all that stuff is behind the scenes stuff I don't really want to think about. I just want to concentrate on my football at this moment in time.
You've obviously had two spells now in England as a youngster, and you come back and you go to Rovers and you play really well and you earn that move to Preston. When you went back to Preston, were there similarities to when you went over as a really young guy, or did you feel it was a very different experience, that you were a bit more ready for it?
It was completely different. I did feel like I was more ready for it. Not as in previously, I didn't feel like I was ready for it. You know, I knew what it was going to take and how to kind of cope with it. But obviously, I'm a little bit wiser and I'm older now. And when I went to Preston, you know, it was a great opportunity for me. And I went, and the first two games went really well for me. And then obviously, it just didn't kick on after that, you know. And then I went to Gillingham, and obviously then when I went back to Preston in pre-season, it was kind of new game time was going to be limited for me. And, you know, the manager always spoke to me and was honest to me and never beat around the bush with me and told me that I wasn't really going to get the game time that I probably wanted. And
what was the reasoning?
Not, you know, it's just obviously a lot of people are ahead of me and probably form as to to do with it. Like, you know, it was a great team at Preston, you know, and you know when people are ahead of you, and you know kind of as a player where you are in the pecking order, you can kind of get the feel for it. So I had to assess my options of what I had, and I thought at that moment in time, as in Rovers is the better fit for me and the style of play that they had, and then obviously going off the experience I had there before and the manager that I was going to be working under, I thought that was the right fit for me at the time.
The style of play, one is interesting because yourself and Jack Byrne were constantly going to be linked, I think, with clubs in England, and like Shamrock Rovers play a really attractive style of football. Yeah. They're one of, if not the best team in the league. Mm. So you're going to have a lot of possession.
Yeah.
You're going to create opportunities. That, factoring that into moves, like, it suits you to play at a good team. Mm. That actually a team that's going to have a struggle, not get a lot of the ball, may not suit your skill set.
Mm.
Is that hard to get your head around when you're weighing up options? Or was that something that was a factor when, like, you could have gone to League One, I'm sure, and gone on loan.
Yeah.
Was that a major factor, that actually finding a club that could bring the best out of you?
Yeah, because I've been at clubs where I've played in it and I knew it kind of hasn't suited me, you know, and you kind of not playing in a position that you don't want to, and it is a lot of it at the right fit at the right time for you, you know, and obviously Rovers coming back in, I thought that was the right fit at the right time for me, and obviously I know what they're trying to achieve and I wanted to be a part of that, you know, I was a part of it before, and obviously to win a cup with them, it means a lot, like, you know, and obviously, this season, we have ambitions to do things, and hopefully we can put a successful season. You know, we started off well, but it is only start. But it is a fact that you got to think about when you're a footballer, like, what style of play is it? Will I fit into it? And how is the team going to play? But it is, like, but it wouldn't be a decisive factor in some people's mouths, but you kind of do have to look at it. And at that moment in time when I was making the decision, that's a factor that I put my decision into. I knew the brand of football. I knew I've been in it before and I enjoyed it, and I made that decision to go back to Rovers.
And I guess you want to be somewhere where you're happy as well, and that's always a difficulty for younger footballers, that like the money that's offered in England, as successful as people want the Electricity League to be, it'll never be able to match even probably championship sort of wages. And like Jack Byrne has touched on this, coming home, living with his ma, he's actually in a very good place in his life. That balance of, I love living in Dublin, it's a good thing, I'm really happy playing this sort of football, against forcing yourself back to England where it's going to be a bit of a struggle maybe for 3 or 4 years off the pitch. Have you thought about that? Was that a factor in this as well?
It kind of was, because I knew how happy I was. Mm. You know, I was in Jack touching on them subjects. When you're away, you don't have that feeling of being able to, like, be in your mum's, go out with friends, have all the things that you know that you have at home. And, you know, obviously, it played probably a little bit of a factor in my decision, but...
Would you have been homesick?
No, I wouldn't have been homesick to where, like, I couldn't have dealt with it. I knew, listen, I have to go home, I can't cope with it. I could cope with it. Fella, it is lonely, but you start to... know how you start to just get on with it in a way. But all the things that you have, it's home comforts in it, like, that you don't have away. And I do personally enjoy being in Ireland, and some people are different to think, like, they want to be away. But listen, it's whatever, like, you're interested in and whatever you want to do. But yeah, it's kind of night and day, because it's what you're familiar to. You have your family, you have everybody that you would speak to, and where it's different the way. You might be just on your own. You might have a girlfriend with you, which I did, and that gets you through it. And you know what I mean? You have somebody to lean on, and you have somebody to go and do things with.
You Sean McDermott Street?
Yeah, Sean McDermott Street, yeah.
Troy Parrott territory?
He would have
been. My knowledge of North Inner City streets isn't the best.
Champions Avenue. I don't really know if he... He would have been Liberty House.
Right.
On Mary's Mansions. I think it was Mary's Mansions where he would have grew up, you know. I don't know Troy that well. I've seen him once or twice, you know. Obviously, growing up as a kid, I would have seen him, but I think I'm nearly 8 years older than Troy, so I think there's a big age gap there, you know, but we would be the same area that we're from.
Right, yeah. The this season then, obviously, Shamrock Rovers are the team, even though they're not the champions, it always feels they're the team everyone wants to beat. Are you at a stage with the position you put yourselves in that anything less than winning the league would be failure?
I think we obviously every season is in the structure of the club and how big the club is. Right. It's got to be an ambition at every, you know, I knew obviously when I first came in, you kind of knew that you might not be challenging it for it this year, but we're building towards challenging for it. But I think now we're proper going for the league. I think last year is, you could tell like Rovers are coming and the squad is being built. And, you know, I think obviously now is in beating Dundalk and they've been such an amazing team over the past couple of years that it would have took a special team to go on and try and take it for them. And I think there is like a team at Shamrock Rovers where it's very talented and, you know, you just obviously seen there Friday night is in the players that are on display and we end up getting the win. But listen, we will be pushing for the league and someone has to come along and take Dundalk. And I think we have a squad to hopefully go on and do that.
And what about Ireland? Because you've played for Ireland, you've scored for Ireland, and Mick McCarthy is going to League of Ireland matches. He's very aware of you. He's obviously talking about Jack Byrne quite a bit. And even watching that Cork game before the goals started to flow, you're looking at you thinking, like, you step above a lot of that on the pitch and the dynamism you have and the quickness.
Yeah.
Is it something that's very much in your mind that you can force your way back in?
I don't really think about it in that sort of way, you know. My focus would be playing as well for Shamrock Rovers. Mm. What comes off the back of that will come. But it's obviously an experience in it before, you know, part of it is like, why couldn't you do it again? Why can't that be an ambition?
Did you feel comfortable when you were in before?
Yeah, obviously I was nervous and I always thought to myself, would I be able to play with these boys and mix it with these lads, you know, and coming away from it, I thought, yeah, I actually probably could, like, and obviously it would be an ambition of mine to go and do it again. I think if you get a taste of something, you have that burning desire to go and do it again, but obviously I have to just do as well as I can and give 100% for Shamrock Rovers, and whether something like that comes, obviously you'd be proud and we'll just see how things go.
Well, things have started all right. Hopefully you get back in the next couple of weeks then from the injury and it all goes according to plan. And best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot for coming in. Graeme Burke there. Air Sport broadcasting 15 SSE or Tri-City League games in the coming months and will continue to broadcast all of the Republic of Ireland's home UEFA under-21 qualifiers.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Diolfin Heskey.